Welcome to the show. I'm your host, Chris James. If you read or listen to any of my fictional books, you'll know I love coffee. I buy my coffee at the Organic Man Coffee Trike here in Laredo on McPherson, the best brew on the planet, even if it's not brewed but dripped. Coffee may have saved the planet a few times, at least in my world. I was just on Big Dog's random show. I had met Felipe back in 2021 while attending the Bigfoot Conference in Jefferson, Texas. I was admiring his pickup, known as the Yeti, and offered him my business card. It took a while since we both have things to do other than talk into microphones. As soon as he gets the recording straightened out, it will be out there for your listening pleasure at Big Dog's Random Show. We talked about a bunch of things, so I can't give you the details, mostly because I forget all of what we talked about. There was a lot of different subjects. If it's paranormal, we talked about it. Ghosts are one of the great unknowns that people have been looking into since time began. In the first century AD, the great Roman author and statesman Pliny the Younger recorded one of the first notable ghost stories in his letters, which became famous for their vivid account of life during the heyday of the Roman Empire. Pliny reported that the specter of an old man with a long beard rattling chains was haunting his house in Athens. This might be why so many ghost stories had the spirit carrying around or dragging around chains. There are some folks out there who call themselves experts. This fascinates me, seeing as no one yet has had a ghost sit down and do an interview. That would be one cool show. Any ghosts out there willing to come on Strange Things, let me know. It would be an unbelievable show. Between CGI and computers that can make people sound as if they are saying anything, nothing will be decent evidence anymore. The numbers of faked photographs has surpassed the actual spirit photographs by quite a few. Hollywood is leading the charge when it comes to bad ghost information. Too many TV shows where it is more important to thrill the audience than to tell the truth. I do my best to give true accounts of ghosts, UFOs, cryptid sightings. The folks I talk to seem to be telling the truth, and hopefully they are. I've been doing this podcast for a while now. I've written a few books. Other podcasters have had me on their shows as a guest. I'm always surprised when I meet people who tell me they listen to me, like Victor, whom I met at the Pan American Courts, and even more surprised when they want to listen to what I have to say. People have asked me, where is the most haunted location here in Laredo? This question will almost always lead to someone trying to sneak in to a location so they can have a thrilling encounter, something to tell their friends about later. I'm all for others having success in whatever they do, but no ghost encounter is worth breaking and entering. If you get caught, your life from that moment on will take a turn for the worse. If you want to have a ghost sighting of your own, contact a reputable group and go along with them. That way you get to use their equipment and you don't have to buy all that stuff. If there is any indication that this group is going to break the law, bail out. the chances they will also be hoaxing you is too great to run the risk. It also looks as if most of these groups are not very well organized or equipped. I have seen articles on the internet where they're going to have a ghost hunt somewhere, and they chat it up as if they know the owner, but it turns out that they don't have permission to go where they're planning on going. And a lot of times, at the last minute, they'll announce that the ghost tour has been canceled. If you're in Laredo and you're looking for a ghost encounter and not wanting to have a police encounter with it, try visiting the Slaughter Park. It's open to the public, and I've gotten a lot of stories from folks who have seen things there. Hospitals are a great place to see or hear something from the other side. A lot of these older buildings are dangerous due to having asbestos in some of the rooms. And there are homeless folks who just might look at you as a quick and easy way to get a few bucks and get their next fix. Anytime the LPRS has gone to any location, it has always been with the permission of the owners. On just about every ghost investigation, we've had law enforcement along, simply because a lot of the members of the group are in law enforcement. The old hospital here in Laredo is probably the site of the most ghost activity around this part of the country. I say this only because I've been there and I've had some weird things happen. The funny thing is, my one full-body ghost apparition was in a different location. The LPRS was contacted by a sergeant who was with the SWAT team. They had been training in the old building and had seen and heard some things that made them nervous. It's not good to have men carrying guns get nervous. He asked Ishmael to just go in and have a look, like it was a training session. See what they might find. And the sergeant went along to help out. This was in 2002, long before Ghost Hunters was on TV. Nobody knew how to investigate the paranormal, so they just winged it. The team took cameras and recorders, and they were trying to catch anything otherworldly. The guys didn't have any fancy equipment. Tony had a cheap camera that he had bought on the way to the investigation. He took a photo along a corridor just to see what might show up. In the resulting image, you can see a green orb that drops down from the ceiling and then moves away down the hallway. The photo was examined by a photography expert and deemed to be unaltered and of some actual thing. Back then, digital cameras were out there, but they were expensive. Tony had a camera that you had to roll the film up as you went. The camera had to be taken to a lab for processing. It was days before you could see what you had actually caught, if anything. Today, just about everyone has a camera in their pocket at all times. Taking a good ghost photo shouldn't be too hard, yet some people will manage to screw things up simply by not knowing. You have a lot of memory for your photos, so don't be stingy. Take photos of everything. If you're looking at a particular scene, click more than one image. If you catch a shadowy form, the naysayers will declare it's nothing but a shadow cast by you or one of your fellow investigators. By clicking two or more images, if there's nothing there, well, you just delete them later. If there is something there, you can compare the two or three images and see if there actually is something otherworldly caught on that photo. Some of our best photos of spirits were taken while not actually doing the investigation. During the Fort McIntosh investigation, one of our members was just clicking photos around the chapel. He took one by the front door, and later, while looking at the images, the photo of the front door had the shape of someone standing next to it. By zooming in, you can see someone is standing by the door. You can also see the molding right through their body. No one had been standing there when the photo was taken. The building had been empty except for just the two LPRS members. If you're using a video camera, this is the thing that people do all the time and it drives me nuts. Move slowly with the camera. Don't just swing it back and forth like you're clearing a room. That's a SWAT team expression. You want to slowly pan through the room. This gives the camera an opportunity to focus on what's in the room. And also, if you do catch something, you can clearly see what it is as opposed to just some blur on the video. At Arechiga Hall, the oldest building on the fort, Ishmael was taking photographs of each group of guests that were on each tour. The students were standing under the painting of the first college president. There's a hallway that runs out behind them. It goes towards the back door. You can see a shape is standing in the corner by the door. It's mostly just a shadow. Comparing the size of the shadow to the group in front of it, it looks like it's a young child, maybe a girl standing by the back door. I am guessing this just might be the little girl that has been seen all over the fort, as well as all over Laredo. When I first arrived in Laredo back in 1988, the first ghost story I heard was about the little girl who was seen at Mall del Norte. Late at night, when the place was closed and the cleaning staff was out doing their jobs, they would see a little girl in a white, knee-length dress sitting on one of the benches by the Sears store. Anyone trying to speak to her would find an empty bench. She would vanish in the blink of an eye. She didn't look like what most people would think a ghost should look. She looked like a real, live, young girl. Well, I used to run a lot, and I would run around the mall. I would run from my house. It's about a mile and a half. I'd go around the mall, and then I'd run back to the house. Hey, I finished 4 marathons. That's why my knees are shot today. On evening shift, I would run from my house to the mall and back. And as I was passing the Sears store, I would stop and I'd look in each of the doors. They were glass. And I'd try to see if I could spot the little girl. Well, I never did get to see her. As I was writing the book, Fort McIntosh and the Paranormal, I interviewed a lot of the campus police. They had several sightings of the little girl. One was driving past the chapel, back when the street was still open to cars. He saw an 8 or 9 year old girl walking along the sidewalk. It was 2 in the morning and she looked way too young to be out walking around the college. The officer stopped his vehicle to ask what she was doing. The girl was gone before he could get his door open. He looked around, trying to see where she might have gotten to, or if just maybe he was seeing things. Police officers don't want to tarnish their reputations, so he decided to keep this to himself. I used a sobrenombre. I gave him a name in the book, so hopefully nobody knows who I'm talking about. The funny thing is, I think I use the name Carl a lot. So there's a lot of Carls in my books that aren't really named Carl. The next officer saw a young girl walking into the motor pool. This was where the college stored their cars, trucks, the backhoe, things like that. He walked over to the gate looking for the little girl. She had vanished. The motor pool is surrounded by a high fence. There was no place for her to go. The officer looked at the ground and he discovered that the only footprints were his own. He also decided to not tell anybody about his encounter. A Laredo police officer was driving through the campus en route to the next neighborhood. As he was passing the old base theater, a little girl jumped from the top of a trash can onto the hood of his car. The officer slammed on the brakes and jumped out. The girl was gone. He became worried that maybe she had spilled off the hood under the vehicle. He looked, but he found no one. Checking the hood for any signs that she had been real, there wasn't even any scuff marks in the dirt. She hadn't been standing on the trash can as he drove up, but she suddenly appeared there just before jumping onto his unit. The same little girl has been seen walking past the Fort Hospital. This building was a Border Patrol headquarters back in the 1960s. The description is always the same. 8 to 9 year old girl, shoulder length brown hair, white knee length dress, and shoes or boots with buttons on the side. They stopped making footwear with buttons back in the 1917. Some people have seen her holding a doll, others a balloon. One witness saw her with another child. After the chapel investigation, Ishmael walked over to the motor pool along with the college president. He was showing how the thermal camera worked. On the screen inside the motor pool, they both saw a human shape about the size of an 8-year-old girl. Ishmael hit the record button, but the memory was full from the chapel investigation. It's one of those moments where equipment lets you down in a pinch. I heard so many ghost stories involving a little girl, I began to wonder who she was and why so many folks have seen her. Young children shouldn't come back as ghosts. The unfinished business or fear of the next plane of existence should not be a factor. Since we don't have the faintest idea on why ghosts are seen, or why some stay and others move on, or why some locations are haunted while others are not, the idea of an 8 or 9 year old ghost is worrisome. What if what people are seeing isn't a ghost? What if it's some other kind of a spirit, say an elemental, trying to trap an unsuspecting victim into some bizarre and hideous dimension? A demon who is pretending to be the ghost of a little girl. Speaking of little girls, check out Annabelle Lee on Trailer Trash Terrors, as she is one of many bizarre characters that show up, along with Beelzebubba, the redneck demon. One of the podcasts I listen to a lot. Trailer Trash Terrors with an S. If you forget the S, you'll hear some really weird music instead. As I was collecting stories for Fort McIntosh, I was also getting a lot of ghost stories not connected to the fort. I do this all the time. I'll look at someone around me, hand them my business card, and ask if they've ever seen a ghost or a UFO or anything. I get a lot of weird looks from people, but I also get a lot of good stories. I'm not worried about what people think about me. I'm looking for stories to fill my next book. In 1981, Laura lived close to the Laredo College on Santa Rita Street. At the time, it was called Laredo Junior College. Her and her family lived in a small wood-framed home near the tracks that came up out of Mexico, and they run north to San Antonio. Trains go by when they're hooking up, and it's a rule that they blow the horns as they approach any and all intersections, even at night. This is not a quiet place to try getting any sleep. Laura shared a room with her older sister. They were both asleep late one night when they heard a sound of someone tapping on the window. Being young kids, 6 and 9, they both looked out and saw a young girl and a boy standing right by the glass. The girl was in a white nightgown with a brown coat over it. She had reddish brown hair. The boy was in knee-length pants with a barn jacket. The young girl looked to be about 6 or 8 years old, and the boy was a little bit younger. As they stood there right outside the window, they were holding hands. The girl asked them to come outside to play. Laura and her sister were tempted, but their father had told them they had to stay in the house after dark, and so they said they couldn't come outside. The girl in white kept asking and motioning for the two to join them outside the house. After a bit, the two outside went away, only to return a few nights later, knocking at the window and inviting Laura and her sister to come out and play. After each late-night visit, Laura noticed that her cat would be missing. She had to search for him and would find him cowering under the bed or some other piece of furniture. It took a lot of persuasion to get him to come out. Anytime the little girl and her maybe brother came, the cat would go and hide. After this had gone on for a few weeks, Laura mentioned the late-night visitor to her dad. He thought Laura was just imagining things. He said there's no way anyone could have knocked on the window because it's 5 feet up off of the ground. The glass would have been out of reach of any small kids. Soon after, the family moved away to the north side of town. The girl in white and her brother no longer came to visit. The house, along with all of its neighbors, was torn down and a warehouse was built on that block. The same description has been told all over town. I've heard about the little girl running around the halls of the health department building. They call her La Niña. She is a troublemaker who pulls things off of the shelves and trips people walking in the halls. Anyone working late at night will hear someone running up and down the hallways, making all kinds of noise. If the witness goes and looks, there is never anyone there. She also likes to ride the elevator from floor to floor. The security guards at the arena, it changes names so often that people are now just calling it the arena. The guards have seen a little girl in white walking around the parking lot late at night. One guard, seeing a small child on the security camera, sent the cleaning staff out to look for her. The cleaners walked around looking for her. When they asked where the girl was, the guard told him that she's standing right in the middle of them. This caused an immediate flight back inside. School teachers have seen a little girl, too dressed up for school, walking around while she should be in class. When they go to ask her why she's not in class, she vanishes. One person I talked to told me they were in their car about to back out of the driveway. The young man looked into the rearview mirror, and he saw a little girl sitting in the back seat. The image was so startling, he quickly looked over his shoulder, but she was gone. He decided instead of going somewhere, he went back in the house. I've heard stories from other towns of people seeing a little girl, but none of them are as prolific as the little girl of Laredo. Who is she, or was she? More important, why is she still hanging around town? We have that old abandoned hospital that's not only haunted, it's a magnet for kids looking for a thrill. The police have been asked to keep an eye on the place. Kids try to sneak in and run around scaring each other. The building is in bad shape and it would be easy to get hurt or worse. An officer was driving by the building late one night when he saw a nun standing in one of the windows. At one time, the hospital had been run by the Sisters of Mercy. That was a long time ago, and the nuns have moved on. The officer went inside to look, wondering who he had seen. There was nobody inside, and no evidence of anyone having been there in some time. He wrote it off as his imagination until he checked his unit camera. There on the monitor was a nun looking out the window. He mentioned this to his girlfriend who used to work at the hospital back when it was still functioning. She told him about her encounter. She'd been in the basement about to take the elevator upstairs. She stepped into the cab and pushed the button for her floor. Just before the doors closed, a nun walked into the cab and stood next to her. She never pushed any of the buttons. The cab suddenly became extremely cold. The elevator moved up to the upper floors. When the doors opened, the nun stepped out. The woman stepped out immediately after. The hallway was empty. She thought about how the nun had been dressed, as she'd been wearing an old-style habit from back in the 50s or early 60s. Over the years, while the hospital was still in business, people would report seeing a nun either in the elevator or one of the upper floors. Sometimes she would be accompanied by a little boy. Other times, she was alone. Her habit was what caught their attention. It was from an old order that was no longer in the area. It makes me think about that statue out front of the new Mercy Hospital that is now called the LMC. Some of y'all will know what I'm talking about. While looking for stories, I interviewed a man who told me about his encounter at the hospital. His mother worked there and he would hang out on the days that he didn't have school. To stay out of people's way, he spent time in the stairwell. One day he was playing on the steps. This was back when people didn't object to kids being at work or playing in what they might consider dangerous locations today. As he was standing there, there was a little girl peeking at him from around the corner. He said she looked to be maybe a year younger than him, and she was standing on the stairs above. He looked at her and she looked at him, and no, that is not a reference to a Kinks song. She smiled and then took off running up the stairs. Figuring this was an invitation to follow, he began running up the stairs behind her. He could hear her footsteps as she went, but she was always just ahead, just around the next corner. He made it to the sixth and final floor, but she wasn't there. The doors all have those closer devices that when you open them, it takes them a few seconds to swing back shut. At no time did the sound of her footsteps stop or any of the doors in the process of closing as he went. He opened the door on the sixth floor and he looked both ways, but she was not there. The sixth floor is where the nuns used to live, and there's a chapel up there. I asked him to describe how this little girl was dressed, and he said that she had shoulder-length brown hair and a white knee-length dress. The idea of inviting someone or something into my home that I don't know is against my rules. Anyone ringing the doorbell can just stand on the front porch until I'm convinced they're not here to try to convert me or to sell me something I don't want. Some folks think they're playing it safe while at the same time they use a Ouija board to communicate with unknown entities. A few people have said Doing EVPs is no different than using a talking board. EVPs, you're recording the voice of the spirits from another dimension. The recorder is only catching their voice and nothing else. Whereas when you use a Ouija board, you're actually inviting something from another dimension to come to your location. You're opening a door with no real idea of what is going to cross into our world. If you listened to last week's show, you know how vampires have to be invited into your home. The same goes for the black-eyed children. The threshold has some kind of power keeping those nasty things on the other side while you are safe on this side. Why or how this works is the subject for another show. When you sit down and place your fingers on the planchette, either one that was manufactured or one that you are substituting that you pull from a drawer or from the trash, even if you don't say anything, you are inviting something to enter your home. I know some folks who use Ouija boards all the time. They have the mental ability to keep the bad things at bay while allowing the spirits that they're looking for to come in. Well, at least that's what they believe anyway. A bunch of kids playing games are not going to be on their guard against demons. It's just a game, right? Mrs. Norris isn't very proficient in English, and my Spanish, well, it needs a lot of work, so I had my wife listen in on this conversation, and she translated everything. I think she has recovered by now. My wife isn't into scary things, not even a tiny bit. Mrs. Norris is not her real name, but this is what she told us about some very strange things either she encountered herself or were passed on to her by family members. Here is just one of the many stories that she told me. In 1984, one of the many small towns in southern Mexico, the people living there used outside facilities when the call of nature needed to be answered. A woman was in her backyard at around 3 a.m. visiting the outhouse when she heard a gunshot just a few houses over. The houses in this neighborhood had evaporative coolers, better known as swamp coolers, which made enough noise that the folks inside didn't hear the gunshot. The only reason the woman heard it was she was away from the houses. The next day, it was discovered, a 15-year-old daughter of the doctor who lived two houses over had shot herself using a shotgun. It was quite a shock to everyone. Some folks said this was probably a result of a dispute with her boyfriend, though nobody could say for sure. With only questions as to why she took her own life, people went on about the day, wondering why such things happened. 2 days later, the 14-year-old daughter of a second doctor went missing. She was not in her room in the morning, and calls to her families resulted in no answers. People assumed that she had run away, probably with her boyfriend, though the family didn't think she was seeing anyone at the time. That night, as a thunderstorm was raging in the sky, a woman living near the second doctor's home saw a body hanging from a tree in the backyard. The body turned out to be the missing 14-year-old girl. She had used strips of gauze to fashion a noose and hung herself. Two sisters, the daughters of an out-of-town doctor who was working in the town temporarily, were found dead in the bathtub of their rented home. One of them had unscrewed the hose to the gas heater, turned on the gas, and then they sat in the bathtub until they both stopped breathing. People are beginning to worry. four girls between the ages of 14 and 15 had all committed suicide, all within a four-day period, and they were all the offspring of doctors. When a 16-year-old daughter of the fourth doctor was found unconscious with self-inflicted cuts to her wrists, people began to think there must be something going on, something sinister that they didn't want to even try to imagine. What could drive five young girls to such extremes, and all from the homes of doctors? The last girl somehow managed to pull through. Her wounds have been severe, but she hadn't lost too much blood. As she was recovering in the hospital, the authorities wanted to know if there was some kind of a connection between these girls, and would there be any more? The survivor said that all these girls did know each other. Having doctors as their fathers, they were all kind of drawn together. One night they had decided it would be fun to play with a Ouija board. They took turns asking questions and mostly thinking that the others were making the planchette move. The night after this get-together, each of the girls involved had vivid dreams in which a voice told them that they now had to murder a family member. One girl eventually told another about her bizarre dream, and then all these girls began to compare with each other as to what had happened. Fear and confusion filled them with worry that they would be responsible for killing one of their loved ones. Not wanting to commit murder, and not knowing of any way out of this dilemma, the girls decided it would be best that they should kill themselves to save the lives of their families. The survivor was taken away to a hospital in Mexico City, and from there the story of the teenage girls vanished into the unknown. Yes, it's just a game, until some demon is loose in your home. I do not use Ouija boards. What is it about the last night of October that is so spooky? Why that night and not all of the others? Walpurgis night is April 30th, 6 months from Halloween, but you don't see kids dressing up and running around town on that night. Halloween is the night before All Saints' Day. Walpurgis night, or Saint Walpurgis Eve, is the eve of the Christian festival day of St. Walpurga, an 8th century abbess who lived in France. It is celebrated on the night of April 30th and May 1st. This feast commemorates the canonization of St. Walpurga and the movement of her relics to Eichstätt, both of which occurred on May 1st, 870. If you know anything about Mardi Gras, also known as Fat Tuesday, it is a huge party with all the stops taken out. The night before Ash Wednesday. It is something to see as long as you stay to the sides and don't get caught up in the mess. Come midnight, Wednesday morning, all of the sinning is to stop and the faithful are to behave as if all that drinking and carousing around was not their doing. I don't recall reading anything about Jesus running around acting the fool on the night before Passover. Here's a little unknown fact. A little known fact. Try this one more time. Here is a little known fact to store away for a rainy night when you want to impress someone. There, I finally got it out. Those floats full of drunken revelers throwing beads at people, it all started as religious scenes from the Bible being pulled through Mobile, Alabama on New Year's Eve in 1850s. Back to Halloween. My thoughts on the matter are, it's not the ghosts and the spirits are more prominent on this one night of the year. They're always around us. All the folks focusing their attention on October 31st cause the atmosphere to feel scary, a tulpa kind of thing. By everyone thinking that the veil is thinning, it does. Walpurgis Night is also an important celebration for certain people. The Church of Satan was founded on Walpurgis Night back in 1966. The European and Scandinavian festival derived from the merging of the ancient pagan celebration of Beltane with the commemoration and the canonization of the Christian saint. There isn't a lot for young kids to do here in Laredo. No amusement parks or attractions. Sometimes kids have to find things to do on their own. Back when I first arrived here, I kept hearing about how some company was going to build a water park just north of town. Due to uncontrollable happenings, the water park never materialized. Kids have to come up with their own way of entertainment. Out to the east of town at the end of Del Mar Boulevard is San Ignacio Road. At one time, San Ignacio Road ran out to a group of live fire ranges used by the Army during World War II. B-17 crewmen would be sent to Laredo Airfield for training. It was too expensive to practice gunnery from an airplane, so instead, the crews would be placed in the back of a big truck with a machine gun mounted on the side. The truck would be driven out to the range, and the airmen would stand in the bed of the truck and fire at targets. The truck bouncing around was kind of like how a plane might act while in flight. You can still find piles of used bullets all over the impact areas. There was also a train that ran in a huge circle, pulling targets for fighter planes to practice strafing runs. The ground crews hung out inside a concrete bunker so they didn't wind up as casualties. The bunker and the track base are still there. After the war, the land was turned into a radar base. The radar base was closed and moved out to Oilton. The land was turned over to the county and turned into a detention center. The folks there were mostly serving light sentences, usually less than a year. Webb County signed a contract with the Texas Department of Corrections to house some folks who had a lot more time to serve. Some of these guys were a bit more violent. No, a lot more violent. Late one night, the wrong thing was said to the wrong person. A small riot broke out, which turned into a big riot. The inmates burned parts of the detention center down. It took 2 days to get the thing under control, and TDC brought in a bunch of buses to haul away the prisoners. I spent way too much time guarding the perimeter as the prisoners were brought out, searched, put on buses, and hauled away. Kids began telling stories about this abandoned facility having been an insane asylum, or there were murderers locked up out there. There might have been one or two in the mix, but mostly it was just guys with time to serve. Others said the place was filled with black magic practitioners, and this led to groups of curious kids sneaking out there to have a look. Carl and a few friends drove out to the gate that led into the facility. There was a locked gate about a half a mile from the detention center that had to be jumped. The road in was in bad shape back during the riots, and it hadn't been fixed since then, so it was in really bad shape by then. Trees hung over the pavement, and the fencing was falling down in places. The road in ran past the facility and wound around at the north end where it entered a huge gate. I have no idea why you had to drive past the prison to get in the front gate. The gate area was covered by a roof so as officers or agents who were coming in could get in out of the sun for a few minutes. Any and all sidearms had to be placed in locked boxes at the gate area. The next gate was only opened once the first gate was closed and locked. Once inside the fence, the facility consisted of 9 buildings for prisoner housing, administration, and recreation. About half of them are partially burnt. These kids broke up into couples and began roaming around the buildings looking for anything of interest. When Webb County closed the facility, they left behind a lot of equipment and supplies. There were bunks, tables, chairs in all of the cell blocks. The beds had sheets and pillows on them, and somehow had managed to endure this time of neglect. Books and papers were strewn about the grounds, along with prisoners' uniforms and shoes. During the removal of the TDC prisoners, all the inmates were stripped down to their birthday suits in the middle of the yard, and, well, their clothes just stayed wherever they landed. Carl was with a goth girl, as he described her, who seemed really interested in the empty jail. As they were walking around near the main entrance, it sounded like something huge jumped off of the roof over the gates. It startled them, but it wasn't enough to scare them away. They wandered around, finding themselves inside the chow hall. The tables and the benches are still there, along with trays and plastic spoons. As Carl was looking about the desolation, a plastic tray came flying from one side of the room, hitting him right in the face. He was nearly knocked from his feet. There was no one in the building other than him and the girl. Carl decided it was time to find the others and get the heck out of there. They moved quickly through the open areas and managed to find the rest of the group, all in the supply building. In the center of the floor was a huge pile of clothes and bedding. As Carl was telling his friends about the flying tray, something began moving under the clothing. Old uniforms and sheets began falling away from some unknown being. The whole gang turned and ran for the gate. As Carl was running, he glanced back to see if anything was chasing them. He saw what looked like a witch, all in black, coming towards them. He yelled to get the others to run faster, and they bolted over the gate and jumped into their truck. They sped away, looking back to see if this thing was still following. There was nothing on the road that they could see. Today, there is a gate at the beginning of San Ignacio Road, so it's now a 3.5-mile hike, just to get to the detention center gate. And it's no trespassing. So if you get caught out there, you're going to have to explain to a judge what you're doing and pay a fine. With the closing of the Webb County Detention Center, prisoners were being housed in the main jail. Laredo received several private jails where prisoners could be housed. Being right on the border, there are quite a few people in need of correction. Just off of 83 South is one of these private jails. Most folks doing time are not bad people. They made a mistake and now they're paying their dues. The guards working at the jails know these people and they have good working relation with some of them. If you spend 40 or 50 hours a week with some people, you're going to get to know them. For those of you that have never seen the inside of a jail, there are corridors where the guards and the prisoners move from place to place, and then there are the cells. Depending on the offense, many prisoners are housed in big, common rooms. Others with a bad attitude or a dislike of authority can wind up in a segregation unit. One person to a room with much higher security measures. The only windows look from the cells into the corridors. There aren't any windows looking out. One of the female guards was walking along one of the corridors, checking doors and counting heads. They do a head count ever so often to be sure that nobody is missing. After making her rounds, one of the prisoners asked her about the little girl that was walking along just behind the guard. He asked, "Was that your kid?" Well, the guard thought he was just messing with her and kind of ignored the comment. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner is served in the cafeteria, and the guards eat along with the prisoners. The same female guard sat down at a table reserved for the staff and had her lunch. Once she'd finished, she took her tray to the drop-off window. The prisoner working the window asked why she didn't give her kid any food. The guard thought the prisoner was just messing with her, just like the last guy. She asked what kid the prisoner was talking about. The prisoner told her there was a young girl that sat down right next to her and watched her eat. The prisoner thought that maybe this was the guard's daughter. After checking with other guards, she heard that many prisoners had reported seeing a little girl walking around the corridors at night. This spirit seems to have some kind of attachment to this one guard. Sam's family used to have a doll that would sing a little song. The doll was getting a bit annoying after a while, so he decided to take the batteries out one day. He flipped it over to where the battery compartment was. Opening the back of the doll, he found there were no batteries. How it was able to sing was beyond everyone's imagination. In an effort to get rid of this doll, Sam tried to set it on fire. The doll wouldn't catch. Burning things like this is a bad idea. Whatever is trapped inside might be released. Looking for a new home, nobody knows where it might head. We don't know if the doll was cursed or simply possessed by some kind of a spirit. Eventually, it was just put into a box and stored away somewhere, and now nobody knows where it might be. I met a lot of people with wild stories. I tell folks, if you don't have your stories written down, once you're gone, these stories, they no longer exist. Once you're no longer with us, who's going to know that you ever even had any kind of a story? If you get it put down on paper, they become a part of history. They're always there for someone to read. Someone like me. When Liz was younger, she lived in an old house by the woods. She could see a cemetery from her back porch. Nice, quiet neighborhood. Hopefully. Liz and her younger sister shared a room with bunk beds in one corner. One Easter, she remembers waking up and seeing the Easter Bunny standing in her room. It felt like a dream, so she didn't scream or try running. The bunny looked more like somebody in a creepy-looking costume. As Liz lay there watching this intruder, she smelled what reminded her of wet hay. Feeling confused and disoriented, the young girl drifted back to sleep, thinking it was just a really weird dream. When she woke for real this time, Liz didn't tell anyone about what she had seen, thinking it was just a dream. Nothing to worry about or mention to anyone. The family did the Easter egg hunt, and her sister found all the eggs hidden around the house. Liz said she found an unusual Easter egg that her parents said they didn't hide. It looked a bit odd, but it was just an egg, so there was still no reason to think more about it. Years later, when Liz was in high school, she asked her parents if they had ever dressed up like the Easter Bunny in order to sneak around the house, hiding eggs all over the place. They both said this was never done because it was just way too much trouble just to hide a bunch of eggs. It wasn't the kind of thing most people would do. As Liz was asking about the Easter Bunny mystery, her younger sister, who had slept in the upper bunk, when this weird experience had happened, said that she remembers seeing the Easter Bunny come into their room in the middle of the night. It was dark, and the younger sister assumed it was one of their parents dressed up. She remembered watching this giant rabbit move about the dark room, and then she said she also remembered how the room had smelled like wet hay. To say this was a shock is an understatement. Liz told one of her friends during lunch about how she'd seen a creepy Easter bunny, and her sister had seen it as well. The friend lived right across the street from Liz and her family. The friend said that late one night around Easter time, years ago, she'd looked out the front window of her house and she saw someone dressed like the Easter Bunny standing in their driveway. To this day, Liz is afraid of anybody that dresses up like a rabbit. If you have a story, or someone in your family has a story of something strange, something bizarre that happened to them in the past, and you want to get it written down on paper so that it doesn't disappear into the time of the world, send it to me and I'll be more than happy to put it down in my next book. Anything to do with ghosts, spirits, UFOs, Ouija boards, cryptids, or just strange things that have never been explained. As long as it's a true story, as long as it's not something you heard on a radio show or on a TV show, send it to strangethings@arcanasa.com. That's arcanasa.com. Send it to me. I'll write it up as a story, and then I'll send you the draft so you can approve of what I wrote. If you don't like it, you can just tell me to change things. I'll put it in your words. I'll just make it a little more readable. If you don't want to send it to me, if you'd rather not have the publicity, even though I won't use your name if you don't want me to, at least write it down somewhere. Put it in a book, put it in a journal, put it on a page on your computer, but somewhere where you can find it in the future. That way, if years down the road you change your mind, you still have access to the story. I've met too many people in the past who have told me that they had written down some strange event, only to no longer be able to find the notebook that they wrote it in. My cat's trying to eat a water bottle that's still full of water. Boy, he's going to be surprised when that thing bursts. So will I, probably. Hope you enjoyed tonight's show. If you did, tell your neighbors, tell your friends, tell everybody they should be listening to Strange Things with Chris James. And as Tony Merkel says, share the show. If it's on YouTube, you can put it out for other people to enjoy. I don't know what's with these cats and water bottles, but they try to eat water bottles. Until next time, this is Chris James for Strange Things.